67. Spit and Bile. My path has been chosen very deliberately. Yes, I agree with everything you have said about Raze, including the severe danger he presents. Dalinar stopped on the switchbacks down from the pinnacle, Navani at his side. In the waning light they watched a river of men flowing back into the war camps from the shattered plains. The armies of Bethab and Thanadol were returning from their plateau run following their high princes, who had probably gotten back somewhat earlier. Down below, a rider approached the pinnacle, likely with news for the king on the runs. Dalinar looked to one of his guards. He had four tonight, two for him, two for Navani, and gestured.
"You want the details, Bright Lord?" asked the bridgeman.
"Please." The man jogged off down the switchbacks. Dalinar watched him go, thoughtful. These men were remarkably disciplined, considering their origin, but they were not career soldiers. They did not like what he had done in throwing their captain into prison. He suspected they wouldn't let it become a problem. Captain Kaladin led them well. He was the exact type of officer Dalinar looked for. The kind that showed initiative not because of a desire for advancement, but because of the satisfaction of a job well done. Those kinds of soldiers often had rocky starts until they learned to keep their heads. Storms. Dalinar himself had needed similar lessons pounded into him at various points in his life. He continued with Navani down the switchbacks, walking slowly. She looked radiant tonight, hair done with sapphires that glowed softly in the light. Navani liked these strolls together, and they were in no hurry to arrive at the feast.
"I keep thinking," Navani said, continuing their previous conversation, "that there should be a way to use fabrials as pumps. You have seen the gemstones built to attract certain substances, but not others. It is most useful with something like smoke above a fire. Could we make this work with water?"
Dalinar grunted, nodding.
"More and more buildings in the war camps are plumbed," she continued, "after the Carbronthian manner, but those use gravity itself as a way to conduct the liquid through their piping. I imagine true motion, with gemstones at the ends of piping segments, to pull water through at a flow, against the pull of the earth," he grunted again. "We made a breakthrough in the design of new shard blades the other day."
"What? Really?"
he asked.
"What happened? How soon will you have one ready?"
She smiled, arm around his.
"What?"
"Just seeing if you are still you," she said. "Our breakthrough was realizing that the gemstones in the blades, used to bond them, might not have originally been part of the weapons."
He frowned.
"That's important."
"Yes. If this is true, it means the blades aren't powered by the stones. Credit goes to Rushu, who asked why a shard blade can be summoned and dismissed, even if its gemstone has gone done. We had no answers, and she spent the last few weeks in contact with Carbronth, using one of those new information stations. She came up with a scrap from several decades after the Recreants which talks about men learning to summon and dismiss blades by adding gemstones to them, an accident of ornamentation, it seems."
He frowned as they passed a shalebark outcropping, where a gardener was working late, carefully filing away and humming to himself. The sun had set. Solace had just risen in the east.
"If this is true," Navani said, sounding happy, "we're back to knowing absolutely nothing about how shard blades were crafted."
"I don't see why that's a breakthrough at all."
She smiled, patting him on the arm.
"Imagine you had spent the last 5 years believing an enemy had been following Dialector's War as a model for tactics, but then heard it reported they instead had never heard of the treatise."
"Ah."
"We had been assuming that somehow the strength and lightness of the blades was a fabrial construct, powered by the gemstone," Navani said. "This might not be the case. It seems the gemstone's purpose is only used in initially bonding the blade, something that the Radiants didn't need to do."
"Wait, they didn't?"
"Not if this fragment is correct. The implication is that the Radiance could always dismiss and summon blades, but for a time the ability was lost. It was only recovered when someone added a gemstone to his blade. The fragment says the weapons actually shifted shape to adopt the stones, but I'm not certain if I trust that. Either way, after the Radiance fell, but before men learned to put gemstones into their blades and bomb them, the weapons were apparently still supernaturally sharp and light, though bonding was impossible. This would explain several other fragments of records I've read and found confusing. She continued, and he found her voice pleasant. The details of Fabrial construction, however, were not pressing to him at the moment. He did care. He had to care, both for her and for the needs of the kingdom. He just couldn't care right now. In his head, he went over preparations for the expedition out onto the Shattered Plains, how to protect the Soulcasters from sight, as they preferred. Sanitation shouldn't be an issue, and water would be plentiful. How many scribes would he need to bring? Horses. Only 1 week remained, and he had the majority of the preparations in place, such as mobile bridge construction and supply estimations. There was always more to plan, however. Unfortunately, the biggest variable was one he couldn't plan for, not specifically. He didn't know how many troops he'd have. It depended on which of the High Princes, if any, agreed to go with him. Less than a week out, and he still wasn't certain if any of them would. I could use Hatham most, Dalinar thought. He runs a tight army. If only Aladar hadn't sided with Satyr so vigorously. I can't figure that man out. Thanadol and Bethab. Storms. Will I bring their mercenaries if either of those two agree to come? Is that the kind of force I want? Dare I refuse any spear that comes to me?
I'm not going to get a good conversation out of you tonight, am I?
Nivani asked. No, he admitted as they reached the base of the pinnacle and turned south. I'm sorry. She nodded, and he could see the mask cracking. She talked about her work because it was something to talk about. He stopped beside her.
I know it hurts, he said softly, but it will get better.
She wouldn't let me be a mother to her, Dalinar,
Nivani said, staring into the distance.
Do you know that? It was almost like once Yasna climbed into adolescence, she no longer needed a mother. I would try to get close to her, and there was this coldness, like even being near me reminded her that she had once been a child. What happened to my little girl? So full of questions.
Dalinar pulled her close. Propriety could seek damnation. Nearby, the three guards shuffled, looking the other way.
They'll take my son, too,
Nivani whispered.
They're trying.
I will protect him, Dalinar promised.
And who will protect you?
He had no answer to that. Answering that his guards would do it sounded trite. That wasn't the question she'd asked. Who will protect you when that assassin returns?
I almost wish that you would fail, she said, in holding this kingdom together. You make a target of yourself. If everything just collapsed and we fractured back to Princedom's, perhaps he'd leave us alone.
And then the storm would come, Dalinar replied softly. 12 days. Nivani eventually pulled back, nodding, composing herself.
You're right, of course. This is the first time for me, dealing with this. How did you manage it when died? I know you loved her, Dalinar. You don't have to deny it for my ego.
He hesitated. The first time. An implication that when Gavilar had died, she had not been broken up about it. She had never stated so outright an implication of the difficulties the two had been having.
I'm sorry, she said. Was that too difficult a question, considering its source?
She tucked away her kerchief, which she'd used to dab her eyes dry.
I apologize. I know that you don't like to talk about her.
It wasn't that it was a difficult question. It was that Dalinar didn't remember his wife. How odd that he could go weeks without even noticing this hole in his memories, this change that had ripped out a piece of him and left him patched over, without even a prick of emotion when her name, which he could not hear, was mentioned. Best to move to some other topic.
I cannot help but assume that the assassin is involved in all of this, Navani. The storm that comes, the secrets of the shattered plains, even Gavilar. My brother knew something, something he never shared with any of us.
You must find the most important words a man can say.
I would give almost anything to know what it was.
I suppose,
Navani said.
I will go back to my journals of the time. Perhaps he said something that would give us clues, though I warn you I've pored over those accounts dozens of times.
Dalinar nodded.
Regardless, that isn't a worry for today. Today, they are our goal.
They turned, looking as coaches clattered past, making their way to the nearby feasting basin where lights glowed a soft violet in the night. He narrowed his eyes and found Ruthar's coach approaching. The High Prince had been stripped of shards, all but his own blade. They had cut off Sadius's right hand in this mess, but the head remained, and it was venomous. The other High Princes were almost as big a problem as Sadius. They resisted him because they wanted things to be easy, as they had been. They glutted themselves on their riches and their games. Feasts manifested that all too much, with their exotic food, their rich costumes. The world itself seemed close to ending, and the Alethi threw a party.
You must not despise them,
Navani said. Dalinar's frown deepened. She could read him too well.
Listen to me, Dalinar, she said, turning him to meet her eyes. Has any good ever come from a father hating his children?
I don't hate them.
You loathe their excess, she said, and you are close to applying that emotion to them as well. They live the lives they have known, the lives that society has taught them are proper. You won't change them with contempt. You aren't wit. It isn't your job to scorn them. Your job is to enfold them, encourage them. Lead them, Dalinar.
He took a deep breath and nodded.
I will go to the women's island, she said,
noticing the Bridgeman guard returning with news on the plateau assault.
They consider me an eccentric vestige of things better left in the past, but I think they still listen to me. Sometimes. I'll do what I can.
They parted, Navani hurrying to the feast, Dalinar idling as the Bridgeman passed his news. The plateau run had been successful, a gem heart captured. It had taken quite a long time to reach the target plateau, which was deep into the plains, almost to the edge of the scouted area. The Parshendi had not appeared to contest the gem heart, though their scouts had watched from a distance.
Again they decide not to fight, Dalinar thought, walking the last distance to the feast. What does the change mean? What are they planning?
The feast basin was made up of a series of soul-cast islands beside the pinnacle complex. It had been flooded, as it often was, in a way that made the soul-cast mounds rise between small rivers. The water glowed. Spheres, and a lot of them, must have been dumped into the water to give it that ethereal cast. Purple, to match the moon that was just rising, violet and frail on the horizon. Lanterns were placed intermittently, but with dim spheres, perhaps to not distract from the glowing water. Dalinar crossed the bridges to the farthest island, the King's Island, where the genders mixed and only the most powerful were invited. This was where he knew he'd find the High Princes. Even Bethab, who had just returned from his plateau run, was already in attendance, though as he preferred to use mercenary companies for the bulk of his army, it wasn't surprising he had returned so quickly from the run. Once they captured the gem heart, he'd often ride back quickly with the prize, letting them sort out how to return. Dalinar passed Wit, who had arrived back at the war camps with characteristic mystery, insulting everyone who passed. He had no wish to fence words with the man today. Instead, he sought out Vama. The High Prince seemed to have actually listened to Dalinar's pleas during their most recent dinner. Perhaps with more nudging, he would commit to joining Dalinar's assault in the Parshendi. Eyes followed Dalinar as he crossed the island, and whispered conversations broke out like rashes as he passed. He expected those looks by now, though they still unnerved him. Were they more plentiful this night? More lingering? He couldn't move in Alethi society these days without catching a smile on the lips of too many people, as if they were all part of some grand joke that he had not been told. He found Vama speaking with a group of three older women. One was Sivi, a high lady from Ruthar's court who, contrary to custom, had left her husband at home to see to their lands, coming to the Shattered Plains herself. She eyed Dalinar with a smile and eyes like daggers. The plot to undermine Satius had to a large extent failed, but that was in part because the damage and shame had been deflected to Ruthar and Aladar, who had suffered the loss of Shardbearers and the men who had dueled Adolin. Well, those two were never going to have been Dalinar's. They were Satius's strongest supporters. The four people grew silent as Dalinar stepped up to them. High Prince Vama squinted in the dim light, looking Dalinar up and down. The round-faced man had a cupbearer standing behind him with a bottle of some exotic liquor or another. Vama often brought his own spirits to feasts, regardless of who hosted them. Being engaging enough a conversationalist to earn a sip of what he'd managed to import was considered a political triumph by many attendees.
"Vama," Dalinar said.
"Dalinar? There's a matter I've been wanting to discuss with you," Dalinar said. "I find it impressive what you've been able to do with light cavalry on your plateau runs. Tell me, how do you decide when to risk an all-out assault with your riders? The loss of horses could easily overwhelm your earnings from gem hearts, but you have managed to balance this with clever stratagems."
Vama
sighed, looking to the side. A group of young men nearby was snickering as they looked toward Dalinar.
"It is a matter of..."
Another sound, louder, came from the opposite side of the island. Vama started again, but his eyes flicked in that direction, and a round of laughter burst out more loudly. Dalinar forced himself to look, noting women with hands to mouths, men covering their exclamations with coughs, a half-hearted attempt at maintaining Alethi propriety. Dalinar looked back at Vama.
"What is happening?"
"I'm sorry, Dalinar."
Beside him, Sivi tucked some sheets of paper under her arm. She met Dalinar's gaze with a forced nonchalance.
"Excuse me," Dalinar said.
Hands forming fists, he crossed the island toward the source of the disturbance. As he neared, they quieted, and people broke up into smaller groups, moving off. It almost seemed planned how quickly they dispersed, leaving him to face Satius and Aladar standing side by side.
"What are you doing?"
Dalinar demanded of the two of them.
"Feasting," Satius said, then shoved a piece of fruit into his mouth. "Obviously."
Dalinar drew in a deep breath. He glanced at Aladar, long-necked and bald, with his mustache and tuft of hair on his bottom lip.
"You should be ashamed," Dalinar growled at him. "My brother once called you a friend."
"And not me," Satius said.
"What have you done?" Dalinar demanded. "What is everyone talking about, snickering about behind their hands?"
"You always assume it's me," Satius said.
"That's because any time I think it isn't you, I'm wrong."
Satius gave him a thin-lipped smile. He started to reply, but then thought a moment and finally just stuffed another chunk of fruit in his mouth. He chewed and smiled.
"Tastes good," was all he said.
He turned to walk away. Aladar hesitated. Then he shook his head and followed.
"I never figured you for a pup to follow at a master's heels, Aladar," Dalinar called after him.
No reply. Dalinar growled, moving back across the island, looking for someone from his own war camp who might have heard what was happening. Elokar was late to his own feast, it seemed, though Dalinar did see him approaching outside now. No sign of Tashav or Kahl yet. They would undoubtedly make an appearance now that he was a shard-bearer. Dalinar might have to move to one of the other islands, where lesser light eyes would be mingling. He started that way, but stopped as he heard something.
"Why, Bright Lord Amaram," Whit cried. "I was hoping I'd be able to see you tonight. I've spent my life learning to make others feel miserable, and so it's a true joy to meet someone so innately talented in that very skill as you are."
Dalinar turned, noticing Amaram, who had just arrived. He wore his cape of the Knight's Radiant and carried a sheaf of papers stuck under his arm. He stopped beside Wit's chair, the nearby water casting a lavender tone across their skin.
"Do I know you?"
Amaram asked.
"No,"
Wit said lightly. "But fortunately you can add it to the list of many, many things of which you are ignorant."
"But now I've met you," Amaram said, holding out a hand. "So the list is one smaller."
"Please," Wit said, refusing the hand. "I wouldn't want it to rub off on me."
"It?"
"Whatever you've been using to make your hands look clean, Bright Lord Amaram, it must be powerful stuff indeed." Dalinar hurried over.
"Dalinar?"
Wit said, nodding.
"Wit? Amaram, what are those papers?" "One of your clerks seized them and brought them to me," Amaram said. "Copies were being passed around the feast before your arrival. Your clerk thought Brightness Navani might want to see them if she hasn't already. Where is she?"
"Staying away from you, obviously," Wit noted. "Lucky woman."
"Wit,"
Dalinar said sternly, "do you mind?"
"Rarely."
Dalinar sighed, looking back to Amaram and taking the papers.
"Brightness Navani is on another island. Do you know what these say?"
Amaram's expression grew grim.
"I wish I didn't."
"I could hit you in the head with a hammer," Wit said happily. "A good bludgeoning would make you forget and do wonders for that face of yours."
"Wit,"
Dalinar said flatly. "I'm only joking."
"Good.
A hammer would hardly dent that thick skull of his." Amaram turned to Wit, a look of bafflement on his face.
"You're very good at that expression," Wit noted. "A great deal of practice, I assume?"
"This is the new Wit?"
Amaram asked.
"I mean," Wit said, "I wouldn't want to call Amaram an imbecile."
Dalinar nodded.
"Because then I'd have to explain to him what the word means, and I'm not certain any of us have the requisite time."
Amaram sighed.
"Why hasn't anyone killed him yet?"
"Dumb luck," Wit said. "In that I'm lucky, you're also dumb."
"Thank you, Wit,"
Dalinar said, taking Amaram by the arm and towing him to the side.
"One more, Dalinar," Wit said. "Just one last insult, and I leave him alone."
They continued walking.
"Lord Amaram,"
Wit called, standing to bow, his voice growing solemn.
"I salute you. You are what lesser cretins like Sadius can only aspire to be."
"The papers," Dalinar said to Amaram, pointedly ignoring Wit.
"They are accounts of your experiences, Bright Lord,"
Amaram said softly.
"The ones you have during the storms. Written by Brightness Navani herself."
Dalinar took the papers. His visions. He looked up and saw groups of people collecting on the island, chatting and laughing, shooting glances at him.
"I see," he said softly. It made sense now. The hidden snickering. "Find Brightness Navani for me, if you would."
"As you request,"
Amaram said, but stopped short, pointing. Navani stalked across the next island over, heading toward them with a tempestuous air about her.
"What do you think, Amaram?"
Dalinar said.
"Of the things that are being said of me?"
Amaram met his eyes.
"They are obviously visions from the Almighty himself, given to us in a time of great need. I wish I had known their contents earlier. They give me great confidence in my position and in your appointment as prophet of the Almighty."
A dead god can have no prophets.
Dead?
No, Dalinar. You obviously misinterpret that comment from your visions. He speaks of being dead in the minds of men, that they no longer listen to his commands. God cannot die.
Amaram seemed so earnest. Why didn't he help your sons? Kaladin's voice rang in Dalinar's mind. Amaram had come to him that day, of course, professing his apologies and explaining that, with his appointment as a Radiant, he couldn't possibly have helped one faction against another. He said he needed to be above the squabbles between High Princes, even when it pained him.
"And the supposed Herald?" Dalinar asked. "The thing I asked you about?"
"I am still investigating,"
Dalinar nodded.
"I was surprised,"
Amaram noted,
"that you left the slave as head of your guard."
He glanced to the side to see where Dalinar's guards for the night stood, just off the island in their own area, waiting with the other bodyguards and attendants, including many of the wards of the High Ladies present.
There had been a time, not too long ago, when few had felt the need to bring their guards with them to a feast. Now the place was crowded. Captain Kaladin wasn't there. He was resting after his imprisonment.
"He's a good soldier," Dalinar said softly. "He just carries a few scars that are having trouble healing."
"Vitiligative nose," Dalinar thought. "I have a few of those myself."
"I merely worry that he is incapable of properly protecting you,"
Amaram said.
"Your life is important, Dalinar. We need your visions, your leadership. Still, if you trust the slave, then so be it. Though I certainly wouldn't mind hearing an apology from him. Not for my own ego, but to know that he's put aside this misconception of his."
Dalinar gave no reply as Nabani strode across the short bridge onto their island. Wit started to proclaim an insult, but she swatted him in the face with a stack of papers, giving him barely a glance as she continued on toward Dalinar. Wit watched after, rubbing his cheek and grinned. She noted the papers in his hand as she joined the two of them, who seemed to stand among a sea of amused eyes and hushed laughter.
"They added words,"
Navani hissed.
"What?"
Dalinar demanded. She shook the papers.
"These. You've heard what they contain?"
He nodded.
"They aren't as I wrote them,"
Navani said.
"They've changed the tone, some of my words, to imply a ridiculousness to the entire experience, and to make it sound as if I am merely indulging you. What's worse, they added a commentary in another handwriting that pokes fun at what you say and do."
She took a deep breath, as if to calm herself.
"Dalinar, they're trying to destroy any shred of credibility left to your name."
"I see. How did they get these?"
Amaram asked.
"Through theft, I do not doubt," Dalinar said, realizing something. "Navani and my sons always have guards, but when they leave their rooms, those are relatively unprotected. We may have been too lax in that regard. I misunderstood. I thought his attacks would be physical."
Navani looked out at the sea of light eyes, many congregating in groups around the various High Princes in the soft, violet light. She stepped closer to Dalinar, and though her eyes were fierce, he knew her well enough to guess what she was feeling. Betrayal, invasion. That which was private to them, opened up, mocked, and then displayed for the world.
"Dalinar, I'm sorry,"
Amaram said.
"They did not change the visions themselves?"
Dalinar asked.
"They copied them accurately?"
"So far as I can tell, yes,"
Navani said.
"But the tone is different. And that mockery. Storms. It's nauseating. When I find the woman who did this..."
"Peace, Navani,"
Dalinar said, resting his hand on her shoulder.
"How can you say that?"
"Because this is the act of childish men who assume that I can be embarrassed by the truth."
"But the commentary. The changes. They've done everything they can to discredit you. They've even managed to undermine the part where you offer a translation of the Dawn Chant. It..."
As I fear not a child with a weapon he cannot lift, I will never fear the mind of a man who does not think.
Navani frowned at him.
It's from the Way of Kings, Dalinar said. I am not a youth, nervous at his first feast. Sadeus makes a mistake in believing I will respond to this as he would. Unlike a sword, scorn has only the bite you give it.
This does hurt you,
Navani said, meeting his eyes.
I can see it, Dalinar.
Hopefully, the others would not know him well enough to see what she did. Yes, it did hurt. It hurt because these visions were his, entrusted to him, to be shared for the good of men, not to be held up for mockery. It was not the laughter itself that pained him, but the loss of what could have been. He stepped away from her, passing through the crowd. Some of those eyes he now interpreted as being sorrowful, not just amused. Perhaps he was imagining it, but he thought some pitied him more than scorned him. He wasn't certain which emotion was more damaging. Dalinar reached the food table at the back of the island. There he picked up a large pan and handed it to a bewildered serving woman, then hauled himself up onto the table. He set one hand on the lantern pole beside the table and looked out over the small crowd. They were the most important people in Alethkar. Those who hadn't already been watching him turned with shock to see him up there. In the distance, he noticed Adolin and Brightness Shallan rushing onto the island. They'd likely only just arrived and heard the talk. Dalinar looked to the crowd.
"What you have read," he bellowed, "is true."
Stunned silence. Making a spectacle of oneself in this way was not done in Alethkar. He, however, had already been this evening's spectacle.
"Commentary has been added to discredit me," Dalinar said, "and the tone of Navani's writing has been changed. But I will not hide what has been happening to me. I see visions from the Almighty. They come with almost every storm. This should not surprise you. There have been rumors circulating about my experiences for weeks now. Perhaps I should have released these visions already. In the future, each one I receive will be published so that scholars around the world can investigate what I have seen."
He sought out Sadeus, who stood with Aladar and Ruthar. Dalinar gripped the lantern pole, looking back at the Alethi crowd.
"I do not blame you for thinking I am mad. It is natural. But in the coming nights, when rain washes your walls and the wind howls, you will wonder. You will question. And soon, when I offer you proof, you will know. This attempt to destroy me will then vindicate me instead."
He looked over their faces, some aghast, some sympathetic, others amused.
"There are those among you who assume I will flee or be broken because of this attack," he said. "They do not know me as well as they presume. Let the feast continue, for I wish to speak with each and every one of you. The words you hold may mock, but if you must laugh, do it while looking me in the eyes."
He stepped down from the table. Then he went to work. Hours later, Dalinar eventually let himself sit down in a seat beside a table at the feast, exhaustion spren swirling around him. He'd spent the rest of the evening moving through the crowd, forcing his way into conversations, drumming up support for his excursion onto the plains. He had pointedly ignored the pages with his visions on them, except when asked direct questions about what he'd seen. Instead, he had presented them with a forceful, confident man, the Blackthorn turned politician. Let them chew on that, and compare him to the frail madman the falsified transcripts would make him out to be. Outside, past the small rivers, they now glowed blue, the spheres having been changed to match the second moon, the king's carriage rolled away, bearing Elokar and Navani the short distance to the pinnacle, where porters would carry them in a palanquin up to the top. Adolin had already retired, escorting Shallan back to Sabariel's war camp, which was a fair ride away. Adolin seemed to be fonder of the young Vaden woman than of any woman in the recent past. For that reason alone, Dalinar was increasingly inclined to encourage the relationship, assuming he could ever get some straight answers out of Yakavet about her family. That kingdom was a mess. Most of the other Light Eyes had retired, leaving him on an island populated by servants and parshmen who cleared away food. A few master servants, trusted for such duties, began to scoop the spheres out of the river with nets on long poles. Dalinar's bridgemen, at his suggestion, were attacking the feast's leftovers with the voracious appetite exclusive to soldiers who had been offered an unexpected meal. A servant strolled by, then stopped, resting his hand on his side sword. Dalinar started, realizing he'd mistaken Wit's black military uniform for that of a master servant in training. Dalinar put on a firm face, though inwardly he groaned. Wit? Now? Dalinar felt as if he'd been fighting on the battlefield for 10 hours straight. Odd how a few hours of delicate conversation could feel so similar to that.
"What you did tonight was clever," Wit said. "You turned an attack into a promise. The wisest of men know that to render an insult powerless, you often need only to embrace it."
"Thank you," Dalinar said. Wit nodded curtly, following the king's coach with his eyes as it vanished.
"I found myself without much to do tonight. Elikar was not in need of Wit, as few sought to speak to him. All came to you instead."
Dalinar sighed, his strength seeming to drain away. Wit hadn't said it, but he hadn't needed to. Dalinar read the implication. They came to you instead of the king, because essentially you are king.
"Wit," Dalinar found himself asking, "am I a tyrant?"
Wit cocked an eyebrow and seemed to be looking for a clever quip. A moment later he discarded the thought.
"Yes, Dalinar Kholin," he said softly, consolingly, as one might speak to a tearful child. "You are."
"I do not wish to be."
"With all due respect, Bright Lord, that is not quite the truth. You seek for power. You take hold and let go only with great difficulty."
Dalinar bowed his head.
"Do not sorrow," Wit said. "It is an era for tyrants. I doubt this place is ready for anything more, and a benevolent tyrant is preferable to the disaster of weak rule. Perhaps in another place and time I'd have denounced you with spit and bile. Here today I praise you as what this world needs."
Dalinar shook his head.
"I should have allowed Elikar his right of rule and not interfered as I did."
"Why?"
"Because he is king."
"And that position is something sacrosanct? Divine?"
"No," Dalinar admitted. "The Almighty, or the one claiming to be him, is dead. Even if he hadn't been, the kingship didn't come to our family naturally. We claimed it, and forced it upon the other high princes."
"So then why?"
"Because we were wrong," Dalinar said, narrowing his eyes. "Gavilar, Sadeus, and I were wrong to do as we did all those years ago."
Wit seemed genuinely surprised.
"You unified the kingdom, Dalinar. You did a good work, something that was sorely needed."
"This is unity?"
Dalinar asked, waving a hand back toward the scattered remnants of the feast, the departing Light Eyes.
"No, Wit. We failed. We crushed, we killed, and we have failed miserably."
He looked up.
"I receive in Alethkar only what I have demanded. In taking the throne by force we implied, no, we screamed, that strength is the right of rule. If Sadeus thinks he is stronger than I am, then it is his duty to try to take the throne from me. These are the fruits of my youth, Wit. It is why we need more than tyranny,
even the benevolent kind, to transform this kingdom. That is what Noadon was teaching, and that is what I have been missing all along.
Wit nodded, looking thoughtful.
I need to read that book of yours again, it seems.
I wanted to warn you, however. I'll be leaving soon.
Leave? Dalinar said. You only just arrived.
I know. It's incredibly frustrating, I must admit. I have discovered a place that I must be, though to be honest, I'm not exactly sure why I need to be there. This doesn't always work as well as I'd like it to.
Dalinar frowned at him. Wit smiled back affably.
Are you one of them?
Dalinar asked.
Excuse me?
A herald.
Wit laughed.
No, thank you, but no.
Are you what I've been looking for, then?
Dalinar asked.
Radiant.
Wit smiled.
I am but a man, Dalinar, so much as I wish it were not true at times. I am no Radiant. And while I am your friend, please understand that our goals do not completely align. You must not trust yourself with me. If I have to watch this world crumble and burn to get what I need, I will do so. With tears, yes. But I would let it happen.
Dalinar frowned.
I will do what I can to help, Wit said, and for that reason I must go. I cannot risk too much, because if he finds me, then I become nothing. A soul shredded and broken into pieces that cannot be reassembled. What I do here is more dangerous than you could ever know.
He turned to go.
Wit,
Dalinar called.
Yes?
If who finds you?
The one you fight, Dalinar Kholin. The father of hatred.
Wit saluted, then jogged off.